because we always ask our patients, if something comes up, let us know. We want to know what's going on. So he checked himself into the emergency room thinking he was having a heart attack. While he was in the ER, I called him. He was in the hospital bed. He was having chest pains. And I said, I'm telling you right now, I've spoken to Dr. Osborne. I've spoken to the team. I personally looked. You have no blockages. And when I told him that, he started to cry on the phone. What if I told you that 1 in 4 people who show up at the emergency room with a heart attack never make it out alive? And the rest, for the most of them, never saw it coming. You know, in the U.S. alone, over 800,000 people have a heart attack every year. That's 1 every 40 seconds. But here's what's even more shocking. Roughly 200,000 of those are silent heart attacks. They hit without warning. Nearly 50% of all heart attack deaths occur before the person ever reaches the hospital. And for many, their first symptom is death. Today, we're going behind the scenes from the emergency room to the cardiologist's chair with two doctors who are done staying quiet. Joining us, Dr. Kevin White, an emergency room physician who sees firsthand the chaos and loss caused by a system that waits until it's too late. And Dr. John Osborne, a Harvard-trained cardiologist, chief medical officer of Clear Cardio, a leader in preventive cardiology who's helping people detect heart disease years before symptoms strike. You see, today's conversation is about the ugly truth. Why so many cardiologists are still reactive, why prevention isn't standard practice, and how we can flip the system. One scan, one patient, and one life at a time. This is the Power of Prevention podcast, and this episode could literally save your life. So welcome, Dr. White.
Thanks.
How are you? And Dr. Osborne, how are you today?
Fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic.
Absolutely.
What a great... Guys, I have a privilege of sitting here with two doctors. One was a former ER doctor who is now... Why don't you tell everybody what you're doing now, which is really exciting. I'm really excited to hear what you're doing now.
Yeah, we do a concierge-type practice based on focusing on longevity, health span, and lifespan. And you can't really have a conversation on longevity if you don't discuss, you know, the number one killer in men and women. So that's kind
Which
of what brought me to you guys.
Which is heart attacks and strokes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cardiovascular disease. What's the name of your practice?
Prime Health Associates.
Prime Health Associates. Where are you guys located?
We're in Edmond, just part of Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City. Okay. Yep. So all of you folks who are tuning in from Oklahoma City, you know where to go and talk to Dr. White here about longevity. And so what does that mean? What is longevity for those who are watching?
It's just about focusing on health span and lifespan. And what are those things? I'm sure you guys have discussed is that, you know, lifespan is how long you live, but health span is really how active you are in those years, last 10 years of your life. If you're really, you know, doing what you want to do, if you're, you know, hiking, skiing, doing the things you want to do, or if you're spending time in doctor's offices with chronic disease. So not really, just
the quantity, not the length of your life, but the quality of your life during that time.
Yeah, and I'd say more importantly so, the latter there.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. Well, that's great. So what are some of the things you do in your practice?
We focus primarily cardiovascular disease is the number one thing, but then we look at neurodegenerative disease. We look at things contributing to cancer. We do some genomic testing and all that. And we get what we call the fingerprint of the patient. So
okay, interesting.
And it takes a lot of time, and you get all that data so you can treat them in a more personalized way.
Got it. And you have a lot of patients nowadays. You're doing well on that?
Yeah, we're doing okay.
Fantastic.
We're doing good, yeah.
Well, we are so thankful. I know I'm very thankful that you came all the way from Oklahoma.
Yeah.
To meet with us here in the Prevention is Power podcast.
In IRL, as they say.
IRL.
In real life.
In real life.
Yes. In real life.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so you guys are meeting each other for the first time today.
Yeah, we've talked and et cetera and bonded medically.
You guys have something in common that I don't have.
It's just always great to know that there are other people out there who, you know, see this world the way you do, and it's very refreshing.
Exactly.
You know, hopefully it'll be down the road, everyone, but unfortunately, people of our mind are still a rarity,
yeah.
You know, but we're working to...
Well, I'm excited for the conversation today, and I'm just going to sit back in awe, and every once in a while I'm just going to chime in when I can. But I have some things that we definitely would like to get through today. Mm-hmm. So with that, we'll go ahead and get started. So Dr. White, so I understand, so we know what you're doing now, mm-hmm. But I also understand that if you saw it during the intro, you used to be an ER doctor, yes?
Yeah, yeah. I still am, but I've kind of stepped away from that the past few years. Yeah.
Got it. So what was the driving? What was that like being an ER doctor as it relates to cardiovascular disease, heart attacks and strokes? Can you give us a little insight into that?
And we discussed this a little bit before, but yeah, it's all over the place. It's just you don't go in a day without seeing some sort of degree of cardiovascular disease. And, you know, the one thing is as you'll get ready to go on a shift, you just think, later in my career, I would start to think, you know, some guy's out having coffee or some woman is out just hanging out with her kids and her life is going to change probably about 4 or 5 hours. And it just happens like that because they just don't see it coming. So that was a common story that replayed itself. And then, you know, as I started getting into my 40s, you know, you start seeing people close to your age, and there's just some really heartbreaking stories around there. And it just changes the way you think. It's like, we've got to get ahead of this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, initially it started kind of for me, and then later it developed into what we do now, is, you know, bringing my patients, my people along with me to try to avoid these things.
So it was really the seeding ground for why you do what you do now, mm-hmm. right? You, if I understand you correctly, you know, you went to medical school and decided that you were going to end up, you know, treating people. You thought, right, you could really do some real positive influence and impact going into the emergency room. Mm-hmm. If Dr. Osborne, our goal is to never have anybody in the future go to the hospital in an emergency situation due to a heart attack or stroke. That is our goal.
There should be no emergencies.
No emergencies.
Right? No emergencies.
For heart attacks and strokes. So. Yeah. Preventive. That's what it's all about, preventive, right? And the heart disease is very unique, right? You had said it before. Nobody just drops dead of a sudden cancer.
Right. There's no such thing as sudden cancer death.
You're like, you know, any kind. It's like sudden cancer.
But there definitely is sudden cardiac death.
Yeah. And nobody
strokes or heart attacks, right?
Right.
And you're dead.
We talk about colonoscopies all the time, right? Mm-hmm. The preventive approach to colonoscopy. It's like the most, like, I remember, again, our viewers have heard me say this before. I'll say it again. I remember when I was 30, I turned 30 years old, my father leaned over to me and said, in 20 years, guess what? You're going to have something up your butt. And I'm like, what are you talking about, Dad? He's like, yes. He goes, you're going to have a colonoscopy.
Am I going to be moving?
Yes. And this was 27 years ago. I'm 57 years ago. 27 years ago, I was being programmed to get a colonoscopy as a preventive measure to prevent colon cancer. Okay. Colon cancer, how many people does it kill a year? Percentage-wise, from a cancer perspective.
Yeah, it's about 2%.
2%, okay.
2 to 3%.
Now, nobody should die of cancer. Everybody should get, you know, their tests and things like that. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is it kills roughly 2% of the population. Heart attack, and nobody dies of sudden colon cancer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or any cancer, suddenly. Versus what kills half of the population on the planet, men and women alike, and does come out of nowhere with no symptoms, drop dead. We have got to be proactive on this. And so it's a perfect segue into what you did previously was exactly what we don't do here at Clear Cardio. Mm-hmm. We are not reactive, right? We are proactive. We determine, we define the disease, and then we treat you so you don't end up in the emergency room. But it's really interesting, and it's really interesting to hear your perspective, having been an ER doctor. Like, what are some of the stories that
I got to ask Kevin. So I want you to, if you could, I want to see the face of this, right? The personal face.
Yeah.
Was there a particular event or maybe series events that go, there's got to be a better way?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of them, as you know, and in the traditional side of medicine that's so reactive, it's you know, and I wanted to go into emergency medicine because I wanted to take care of people on death's door, that kind of thing. I wanted to do something. And I was, you know, you choose these specialties when you're young and energetic and everything. And then, you know, I kind of changed my thinking. So one of the things that came about, there was a guy who was, you could tell he was just out on a jog in the afternoon on a Saturday. And the thing that struck me was he was a week to the day older than I was.
Mm. How old were you at the time?
I was like 43.
So this guy's young.
Wow.
It's always scary when you see the date of birth and go, ooh.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's me.
Same year and everything, and it was the month, so kind of, I don't know. But so he was out running, and you could tell he was probably just a guy trying to get in shape, and he wasn't, you know, morbidly obese or anything. And
Little dad bod, maybe?
Maybe, yeah, a little bit of that. And he just went down, and he came in. He was having a cardiac event, and he was unconscious. And we were just, you know, he was, you know, we just ran the whole code. He was in VFib, and then he was in asystole, and you play around with all these things, and you just try to, you know, we have a great team. Everybody's doing exactly what they should.
They're triaging, and they're injecting, and all of that stuff. Yeah,
yeah, it's all the things you see on TV, you know, and. And then it just came to a point there was nothing more we could do. We just couldn't get any perfusion back.
So he flatlined.
Yeah, so he was, and we had to declare him dead, right? Yeah. Just a really sad deal.
Wow.
And he didn't have any ID on him, so.
Oh, wow.
So he had his phone, and back then, you know, they didn't have the face. It was just, you know, his finger went on it, and it popped on his iPhone.
So you had to take his dead hand.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And use his cold thumb
to
open up his phone.
Right.
Wow.
Wow.
And it showed his picture of his, you know, beautiful wife and two beautiful young blonde girls. And room just kind of went, you know, down. And now you think, okay, now I have to go talk to these people. And, you know, their life's going to change right now. And you have to present that in such a way that... And it's just one of those stories. They were probably hanging out and having breakfast and doing whatever. And then...
I'll be back shortly.
Yeah. And that's it.
Wow.
And it was weird. I thought about that whole week afterwards because he was a week younger than me or older than me. And I thought, what if this is my last week? And I kind of, you know how you just get going in your head.
The Twilight Zone episode, right?
The spiral down the rabbit hole. I've been there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was just a sad deal. It just really put a face on it. And there's stories like that all over.
So it shows you the ER is the last stop. It's not the first line of defense. It's the last result, right? I mean, you know, ideally, you need to be doing something proactively.
Yeah.
And so that was the genesis. You know, we've had a lot of stories like this, John.
Yeah.
You know, we have a new patient coming in. I think Friday. Very well known man in the sports world, who was just going to Puerto Vallarta. A friend of his has a clinic down there. American man has a clinic down there. A friend of his and said, "Come on down. We're going to do some stem cell injections. I guess you can do it down there. I don't know if you can do it here. I don't know that business." What? Yeah, but he was down there, and he just said, "Hey, you know, you have a CT machine. Let me do a CT machine." And they did. He did a CT machine, and before you know it, he was rushed into a hospital in Mexico to have a heart cath, and he ended up having two stents put in.
Yeah.
We found this out after the fact, he was introduced to us through a good friend of mine, who is also a well-known athlete for many, many years, championship guy, who called me immediately and said, "JD, this is my good friend, so-and-so. You need to talk to him right away, because he went down there to get some stem cells and some IVs, you know, and he's got heart catheterizations and stents. How does that happen? Like, how do we allow that to happen?" And so he's coming up on Friday, but you know, it's just insane what's going on out there right now. And so, you know, having your perspective from an emergency room, an ER perspective, you know, you're on the front lines.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, you're seeing these stories every day of tragedies and you started to think, what, these could be avoided? There's a better way of doing this?
Oh yeah. Like, for instance, this guy's disease started when he was probably in his late 20s. I mean, there's been...
Or teenager.
There's some book around there where they took autopsy...
Right.
And they found Yep. I mean, kids who died from other diseases in their early 20s, you might know this.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, these are studies. So what they did is they took kids, right, who died in Korea and Vietnam, right? Average age was like 18, 19.
Oh, wow.
Right. And then they did autopsies on them.
Wow.
Specifically look at the heart and coronary arteries and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. About 85% had plaque.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was not aware of that. I know that it takes years. It's like a glacial process, but getting it early enough. We always talk about prevention is power. Yes. Yeah. I didn't realize that.
But yeah, so 85% had evidence of plaque in their coronary arteries at 18 and 19. So the disease had already started.
Yeah. Right? Okay. So you get these people that are coming, they're being rushed in. You're in the emergency room, you're on shift, and they're having an event or they're having symptoms. Right. So what is the typical process? Walk us through the typical process of today's medicine on cardiovascular events.
Well, so if you're talking about an acute MI or an acute event.
For those of us who don't know that, what's an MI?
We've got a cardiologist in the room, but I will play a cardiologist.
Well, everybody who's watching the podcast who's not a cardiologist.
This is not a quiz.
Is that a myocardial infraction?
It's infarction.
Infarction, guys. It's an infarction.
Infraction is like a parking
sounds
thing.
Like a swear word. Go infarct yourself.
But infarction, myocardial infarction.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a fancy tense.
Yes,
word,
okay.
So the bottom line is you're not getting blood flow to a particular part of the heart, so you're losing, you're getting necrosis of muscle, essentially, because you're not oxygenating that piece of the muscle, right?
Ischemia?
Ischemia. Yeah.
Okay, ischemia. Okay, I understand that.
So, hospital prides itself, and they should, and I'm not disparaging any of that, because cardiologists, we know great cardiologists, cardiovascular surgeons doing a fantastic job, and this will always be needed.
Yeah.
But pride themselves in door to balloon time or door to that's really important time is muscle. So
what happens?
You need to get you need to have the EKG before they get there or whenever they arrive. They're not comfortable. They're not happy. A lot of times they're having symptoms. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes I've seen a woman who just had nausea and I just did an EKG and she had a anterior STEMI. I mean, it can be tricky. Not everyone follows the rules.
So a lot of people, you think of like the classical clutching your chest and pressure burning ache, whatever, radiating my neck, back, shoulders, shortness of breath, whatever. But some people, particularly women, they feel nauseated or flu-like symptoms or just fatigue, and they can be having a massive heart attack. And the problem is that because they're not really diagnosed up front, maybe no one did an EKG, and then really bad things happen. So, be careful because, there's the classic Hollywood heart attack, right? That's maybe 50% of the time.
Yeah.
The other times, it's a whole different, can be a whole different set of symptoms or no symptoms.
Wow.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So how does an EKG tell you if you have a heart attack?
Oh, that can be tricky as well because not everyone follows the rules.
But, right. EKGs can be helpful, right? What gets me is a lot of times you go to the doctor for whatever reason, they'll do an EKG, right? The value of that is pretty limited, right? Mm-hmm. Now, in the setting of someone having symptoms that could be suspicious for a heart attack, right? Mm-hmm. Then it could be helpful. But just also appreciate you can have a completely normal heart EKG. And still have a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, and I see these people, particularly in the outpatient world, you could have a really funky looking EKG and your vessels be perfectly normal. So, it is a tool. It's quick. It's simple. It's relatively inexpensive, et cetera. But, don't take it to the bank, right? Because it could either be a false negative where you are having a heart attack and it'd be normal, right? Mm-hmm. And then drive you to the wrong decision. You're fine. See you later. Or it can also work the other way where it can look really abnormal and funky and you're worried they're having a heart attack. And then, sometimes those people even go to the cath lab and then we're putting catheters in or tubes in their heart and injecting dye and all this invasive stuff and then find out you're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's just a piece of the puzzle.
It's a piece of the puzzle. Yeah. And
so
then
there's
other tests we do to help confirm whether this is going on, depending upon, that you know, you're familiar with, like troponin levels and things that. Which, you know, if you have symptoms and you have an EKG that looks like this is a heart attack, then and nowadays a lot of times, I'm sure it is up in Oak City and Edmond, that you know, they would do a 12-lead EKG in the ambulance, so you'd already have a heads up. Okay, this is a, we call a STEMI, that's a, a ST segment elevation MI, but that's the real deal MI, right? Which is actually a pretty small number of MIs, but that's the real deal. And those patients need to go right to the cath lab immediately. A lot of times they don't hit the ER, they go immediately to the cath lab so that we can open that vessel up, because otherwise that heart muscle is dying.
It's dying because of lack of oxygen.
Exactly. So a lot of sometimes, depending on the scenarios and all that, you know, we may make that diagnosis in the ambulance, right? And then they get directly headed to the
So how long do you have? I mean, on average, I know everybody's physiology is different, but from the time you have, like, because you can have a heart attack for, like, I've read stories and we've heard conversations and had conversations with people about they were having a heart attack for like a day and a half. They didn't even know it.
Sure, absolutely.
Like, they felt nauseous, dizzy, whatever. They lay down, wake up, whatever, and then they go to the hospital. So obviously they're still getting enough blood to keep things flowing, but then it gets to the point where it isn't, and then they end up in the emergency room. Right. How long before that there's no blood going into where they're going to, and they have the catheterization, the relief of the open up the artery and all that before they start to see real permanent damage to their heart?
It's extremely variable, right? Because you could have just one vessel that goes down, right? And have pretty normal blood flow one moment, and the next moment you rupture a plaque, those lipid-rich soft plaques, and then form a blood clot so that you go from a pretty good channel, hole, to having a blood clot in seconds and minutes. So that can occur very, very quickly. And heart muscle will begin to die within minutes after losing blood flow. So that's why the clock really starts, and that's why hospitals pride themselves on the door to balloon, naturally, door to stent time. Initially, that was 90 minutes, right? But a lot of hospitals these days, I mean, can be 20 minutes. I mean, it could be really remarkably fast.
Yeah. Which get there on time. You're lucky enough.
If the symptoms are recognized, if they're directed and shunted to the right place. Now, you can also have, particularly in older people with lots of disease, you know, they've had this slow, progressive narrowing of the vessels, right? The heart has time to adapt to sort of reshift the blood flow, right? So take it from areas that don't have blockages and put it in the areas that it is, in which case those patients certainly can have heart attacks too, but those are the ones that the EKGs may be not pointing in the right direction, equivocal or, you know, whatever. So they're harder to make the diagnosis, right? Because, again, you could have a normal EKG and have a heart attack and then have an abnormal EKG and be perfectly fine. So it's hard. Another tool we use, particularly if we're not having what we call a STEMI, that's 100% absolute heart attack, get to the cath lab. These things called the opposite of that is a non-STEMI, a non-ST segment elevation MI. You know, those people might have symptoms, might be a little, maybe, could be possibly EKGs are kind of, don't know. And so there we sort of have to, we have them in the ER and then we get some blood tests done. And so you could talk about the blood tests.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the easy ones are the STEMIs because, you know, they're
definitively, you know, they're having
a there's no question, everybody's in agreement and we're moving along, but the, you know, the non-STEMIs, these funny people who aren't quite following the rules, those
What's
can be the
STEMI?
Scary
help
ones.
Help me understand what a STEMI is.
So STEMI stands for ST segment elevation MI, which is the pattern that we see on the EKG. Which different, you know, jiggles and stuff like that. But that's a STEMI.
So, guys, that's what a STEMI is. I still don't know what it is,
so
but it sounds good.
When you see it, it's like, got it. Boom, done. We know where you're going. End of story.
So
there's
if you
really
end up
no
in
debate.
The ER, guys, and you hear one of the ER doctors say, you've got a STEMI, you've got a heart attack.
Nowadays, STEMIs are a lot rarer than they were.
Okay.
Most of the heart attacks that occur these days, right, where it's still heart damage, you're still losing, you know, heart cells and they're dying off and all that, are really non-STEMIs. So they're because of that, STEMI is pretty easy to diagnose. No, STEMI is much more likely to kill you up front. So remember, the EKGs showing a STEMI are people who've lived for the ambulance people to arrive.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Right?
Fair enough.
Yeah, because that STEMI may have started and they died and the next person was the coroner, not the ambulance, right? But if the system works well and promptly you see the STEMI, they go right to the emergency room. Easy peasy, done, right? Non-STEMIs can be a lot more variable. Symptoms, finding on the EKGs. Sometimes we have to then just sort of say, well, I'm suspicious. You know, I can't clear you. You're having some symptoms. EKG looks a little funky. That's the technical term. In which case, we're gonna sit on you here a little bit and kind of see where things go. And so we use some blood tests, which are highly sensitive and highly what we call, use the term specific. There's some proteins, enzymes technically, that are only given off, only present and only given off from heart damaged heart muscle. So if you see any of these, even very low levels, that tells you, hey, this is a heart issue. It's not heartburn. It's not a gallbladder issue or any any number of other different kinds of things and cause chest pain.
Right.
But these troponin markers, or as we call them, or troponins, are very, very helpful. If it's not clear upon the outset with symptoms or EKGs, we basically then do some monitoring of these blood tests over the next few hours. That say, oh, okay, if they're negative, that makes you feel better. Mm-hmm. Wasn't a heart attack. It could be something else. Although it still doesn't mean it's not the heart, right? Because you could have a narrowing and cause symptoms, but if no muscles die, your troponin levels will be fine.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a tricky business, as Dr. Kevin could elucidate.
So what I'm hearing is that they're in the ER. You guys are treating the symptoms of years of disease buildup.
Sure.
It took years for those men and women to get to the point where now, from a cardiovascular perspective, they're in trouble, and they're coming to see you. Yeah, and you're having to deal with that. And oftentimes, I'm hearing a good percentage of the time, they don't survive it.
Sure.
Even though they survive to the ER, they're not necessarily surviving the heart attack. And when they are, you know, there's interventional things going on there.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're seeing the really, if you want to think of that cancer analogy, you know, we're seeing just stage 4 cancer, right, that went through stage 1 or pre-cancer, that went through stage 1, stage 2, stage 3, no symptoms, no one was aware of it.
Yep.
And then we're only being signaled when it's kind of the stage 4 equivalent of it, right?
Yeah.
And you know it's been there a long, long time. So...
Yeah. So, you know, what are some of the early warning signs for those people who are watching the show, the podcast? What are some of the early warning signs that they should be looking out for, either in themselves or in their loved ones, family members, friends, whatever? You know, we've had conversations about, you know, guys being out on the golf course with their buddies, and all of a sudden their buddies, you know, not doing so well, right? What are some of those things that, you know, I'd like to hear from both of you. You from having been in the ER, having seen, you know, the triage and what's going on there, and you from a, you know, just from a preventive cardiology perspective and the physiology side of things, what you've heard in the past. So if we could start with you, if you don't mind.
Sure, yeah. You know, it really is all over the map. It can be nausea, shortness of breath. It can be chest pain or just kind of weakness. So everyone's a special snowflake here, but primarily I would say just dyspneal exertion. You try to get up and walk from point A to point B, and you feel like you just don't have the energy anymore. You might have some chest pain, sure, or you might have some shortness of breath, but you just have that general fatigue and weakness. That could be something that you don't want to overlook.
Just feeling really like I normally feel pretty good out of nowhere, and all of a sudden, you just start to feel like, I just have any energy. It's not because you've stayed up all night or you know, whatever. You just don't have the energy and you're labored and that kind of thing, yeah?
Or one thing, you know, as you're interviewing the patient, getting the history, they say, well, yeah, I could mow the lawn 3 months ago fine. Mm-hmm. But over the last several weeks, I mean, doing it, I'm just dying, right? I'm short of breath, right? Whether or not they have, quote, chest pain. But just, you know, what I could do 3 months ago, I can't do now. And that says something concerning is going on.
Yeah, it's not just allergies necessarily, right? It could be. Right. I mean, it could be, but it's most likely something else. Yeah.
The sad thing is there's a lot of people minimize, you know, especially guys will minimize their stuff.
Oh, God, I'm so bad at that.
I mean, I had to go in and tell one lady that her husband had died, who we coded, you know, it was a sad deal. And he was just up all night with like nausea. And she said that, you know, I just thought it was the baked beans I made. I made a baked beans for dinner.
Oh, yeah. Didn't sit right with him.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was just kind of minimized. And then by we saw him, time had passed, a lot of ischemia, a lot of dead muscle tissue of the heart.
And he just wasn't recoverable.
No. No, it was just a sad deal.
So he had been suffering all night from this, from this nausea. Thought it was the baked beans from his wife.
Yeah.
And then he decided that it wasn't that, and that's what brought him to the ER? Like,
oh, it just gone on, and then he became unresponsive in the morning. So he came in.
Oh, so he actually had a massive heart attack in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And he was unresponsive in the morning. And was he DOA?
No.
So he was still alive.
Correct.
But unresponsive, unconscious.
Yeah.
And to the ER. Mm-hmm. And then you guys did what you could.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't, nothing worked.
No.
And eventually he just passed.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's not rare, I guess. Huh?
No.
Yeah, wow.
No.
The flip side of this is, right, and Kevin is very aware of this, the flip side of that is, right, you want to diagnose these people, take care of them, hopefully, you know, get them to cath lab or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes these symptoms have been dragging on for weeks or months, and finally they show up. But the flip side of that, 90% of the time, people come in worried or having symptoms or chest pain or worried they're having a heart attack, maybe a stroke, and they're perfectly fine.
Yeah, that's true. So you got to weed through all
that. So there's a massive amount of weeding through the wheat and the chaff, right?
Yeah. And that becomes
it's a massive cost. Yeah. It's kind of a pain in the butt for everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't want to miss anyone. On the other hand, odds are that patient, quote, with chest pain, just walking in the door, 90% chance, right, knowing nothing else about them, 90% chance it won't be heart-related. And that's a massive, you know, cost, hassle, time for the patient, you know. So that also is a major medical issue too, right?
Yeah.
So the more you know, if you got it, you got it. If you don't, you don't, right? So that
I'll tell you,
doesn't
you know,
invoke all the cost, hassle, and
it's
expense.
Scary because the more I'm listening to you, you two doctors here, the more difficult it is for me to really – just me personally thinking about my own selfishness. If I have a symptom or we had a patient, for example, like what do I like? Is it a heart attack? Is it stress? Is it did I push too much weight and I maybe tore a muscle or stress my neck or is it anxiety? Because people have anxiety and that creates, you know, heart palpitations and all kinds of crazy stuff that goes out there, right? You know, we had a patient this past weekend. Who we were communicating with very actively, was being proactive about their heart health, who checked themselves into the emergency room. And this is really important thing to discuss. I'm really glad I remembered to bring this up. This gentleman, he's in his 50s, mid-50s, and was concerned, had family history of heart disease, siblings, parents, with such, and then came to see us proactively, and we took him through the process. We hadn't yet given him his results yet because he was brand new, like brand new patient, and didn't have time to sit with us the same day to get through the. We were still waiting for some blood work, but literally like 48 hours after we had initially met him, he reached out to us. Because we always ask our patients, if something comes up, let us know. We want to know what's going on. So he checked himself into the emergency room thinking he was having a heart attack. He was having chest pains, and they got worse over a 24-hour period. Checked himself into the emergency room. They kept him for 2 days in the emergency room. They did EKGs and echocardiogram. They did blood work. They did a number of other things in the ER. And while he was in the ER, he was communicating. I called him and reached out to him. I had reached out to you, Dr. Osborne, if you recall. Mm-hmm. This is just a couple of days ago, over Easter weekend. And he was scared. He was really scared that he was having a heart attack. And they couldn't read it out. For some reason, they couldn't tell him he wasn't having a heart attack. And I said, please, whatever you do, before, you know, obviously you got to trust the doctors, emergency room, whatever. But reach out to Dr. Osborne. If they decide they're going to rush you to a cath lab for whatever reason, let us know so that Dr. Osborne can be involved. And so I said, in the meantime, I'm going to talk to Dr. Osborne. And to Kenton, one of our associates, patient coordinators, and I'm going to get your results, and we're going to take a look at your results right now, because mm-hmm. we looked under the hood. We did the CT, we did the blood work, we mm-hmm. did the AI analysis, and it turns out that he was in the clear.
There was nothing there.
There was nothing there. He had no blockages. We had the proof.
Yeah,
we could show. And I called him up. He was in the hospital bed. Mm-hmm. In the ICU, getting ready to have another thing. Yeah. And I said, I'm telling you right now, right?
Yeah.
I've spoken to Dr. Osborne. I've spoken to the team. I personally looked. You have no blockages. You have very little plaque. I think he had something like...
Oh, trivial.
Trivial.
I mean, stuff you couldn't even see by eye.
Yes.
Right?
Impossible
AI
to
could
see
pick it up.
Only the AI yeah. could see it.
But by yeah. eye.
So yeah. we knew he wasn't having... a heart attack associated with plaque rupture, blockages, any of that stuff. Mm. And when I told him that, he started to cry on the phone. And he said, and I'm getting emotional just thinking about it,
yeah.
Because I imagine myself in his position, mm-hmm. right? Many of you who are watching the podcast are empathetic people.
He could have been that 43-year-old guy.
Yes.
Right?
Could have been that 43-year-old guy that right. wasn't that lucky. So I was able to, immediately he went, oh, I could hear him go, oh, and he started to cry on the phone. And he's like, I'm so thankful for that information. If he hadn't done that, who knows what road he would have gone down.
Right.
Maybe in the prior podcast we did earlier today with Mark Cozart, right, where he was perfectly fine, wasn't showing any symptoms, didn't check himself into the emergency room at all.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. And within 90 days, they were telling him, he was just going for a regular checkup. They're telling him he has major bypass surgery requirements, and they're going to cut open his chest and all of that stuff. And it wasn't. And he got lucky. He was lucky enough to find us, and we found out he didn't need any of that stuff. We have a number of stories like that. David mm-hmm. Ledbetter, mm-hmm. you know, championship golf coach, same issue with him. We prevented him from having a major surgery.
Open heart surgery.
Open heart right. surgery, valve replacement, because we were able to look under the hood. Mm-hmm. So because I was able to, he was fortunate enough, this patient, over the weekend, to have seen us prior to these issues.
Yeah.
It turns out that he had overexerted himself. He was having some anxiety for not knowing, because he didn't have the results yet back. And he had been long-term thinking about his genetic history, his life, and I think I'm having a heart attack. He was convinced he was having a heart attack.
Sure.
We were able to show him, mm-hmm. you're not having a heart attack associated with this. Mm-hmm. Now, could be AFib or something else associated with, we don't know, right? But
I got to tell Kevin this. I don't know if you ever heard this, right? This is what I tell people. And this is something that only dawned on me, 10 years ago, right? I'm 30 years into this now. And I realized one day, when talk about chest pain, which is critical, right? There's chest pain can kill you and chest pain that's a hassle. Most of it is a hassle, as it turns out. But as it turns out, this is what I tell people when we talk about chest pain. Mm-hmm. I tell them it's actually really, really simple because there's only two kinds of chest pain. That's it. Just two kinds of chest pain. The stuff that can kill you and everything else, right? and I'm going to tell you, and this is why I love cardiac CT, right? Cardiac CT can find the plaque that could be coronary artery disease, blockages that can cause heart attacks. It can find pericarditis, because that can cause chest pain. It's not related to the blood vessels, but another kind of chest pain that could even be fatal. It can find aortic aneurysms, where your aorta splits open, rips open, never a good thing. Mm-hmm. Mortality is about 10% per hour if that happens. But we can see that. Yeah. Or even more even better perhaps, is we can see aneurysms that have not ruptured, and we can find all that data. We can even see pulmonary embolisms, things that, you know, blood clots go to the lungs. All of those things cause chest pain, and all of those need to be diagnosed very quickly and taken care of very rapidly. And all of that is figured out with cardiac CT. And if I do not see it, if I do not see one of those things on cardiac CT, guess what? Whatever your chest pain is, and there's a very long list of things that can cause chest pain and mimic heart disease, whatever that chest pain is, we've now taken it from the lethal life-threatening into the annoying but benign category. 100%, zeros and ones, binary.
And that peace of mind is invaluable.
I sleep better. I mean, forget my patients. I sleep better.
Yeah.
Because I know, right? It's done. You know, and you've seen people come in with chest pain. They get admitted, you know, whatever. And then they stick around for a couple days. And, you know, that electric meter is running and the bill is doing this. And then they get stress tests. And, you know, sometimes the stress test looks funky. And then they go to the cath lab and they find out they're fine after a couple of days and $70,000. And it's just crazy.
The meter is running.
Yeah, and the meter is, right? Yeah. Cardiac CT, it's all clarity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing. Anyway. Yeah, but it just goes to show you how important prevention is.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And just knowing.
Yeah.
Right? You've got a problem? No problem. You take care of it.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. I mean, you spent a good portion. How long were you in the ER area?
23 years, 24 years.
So you were in the ER for 23 years.
I mean, I fin. In 2000, and then we moved, got out of residency in 04, and been there ever since.
Wow.
That was one shift?
It just one felt like long it. Shift, 23 years long.
Yeah, he got out for good behavior.
Yes. He's actually only 23 years old. He's been there his whole life.
Yeah.
Born into it.
That's right.
So, wow. Yeah. And rough estimate on during that. Incredible 23-year stint in the ER. How many of those are really, in your opinion, cardiovascular stroke-related, you know, heart attack, stroke stuff?
Well, like you said, the majority of people coming in don't have disease, so you're kind of filled up with a bunch of, there's that degree of nonsense that comes in. And I mean, people, they think something is going on, and you know, not to discredit that, so a lot of it is giving them peace of mind whenever you weed through all that stuff. So, that's important. I'm not, a huge amount though. I mean, that's where
thousands and thousands.
Yeah.
I mean, of the deaths, I guess deaths, serious events, like
you get gunshots,
you get car crashes, you've got, you know, DUIs, you get, you know, all of that stuff. But, you know, would you say a large portion of it is, heart attack and stroke related?
Yeah. Of the deaths that occur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So we don't want that to happen. We want to have you who are, you know, people watching the podcast today. We don't want you in the emergency room and having to go through that process at all. And so you decided, I'm done with that.
And then whenever we started the practice, getting into focusing on proactive care, and then I came across clearly, I don't know how I came across it, but and then we started using it, and I talked to the Clearly guys, and I said, I want to speak to a cardiologist that's not on your payroll that I can just visit with. And he just rattled off your name right off the bat.
Yeah.
He's like, he'll talk to you, just talk to him. And because I think, you know, we're doing this all wrong. We're just doing these, you know, these markers that aren't really directed. And we're
stress
looking
tests, calcium scores, running up and down, blood tests, like things like that.
But yeah, by proxy is how we're doing it. Yeah. And I just... So it's been a great addition to our practice. And then I looked at one you were doing on a podcast, and I mean, we're using something's like a Porsche, but you're using like a spaceship
very fortunate. Yeah, we
have
access to some phenomenal equipment and
we
hardware.
We only use the
software.
Best here at Clear Cardio. Yeah.
Well, you said like virtual autopsy, and I thought, I know what you're saying, but then I saw the images and I was like, oh, it really is.
I mean, as I mentioned before, it is the test, right? Forget stress testing, even heart cath, right? Because remember, even on a heart cath, right, you could have a quote normal heart cath.
Mm-hmm.
but still have a lot of plaque in the donut, right, in the wall of the vessel.
That's
right?
Funny. We had people, we had a case, a guy in room 21 died. He had a normal cath like 3 months prior. Mm. Same kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because they still have the plaque. Just because they, and it probably soft plaque.
Oh, absolutely, in right? It was all out here, but, right? Impossible to see.
Yeah.
Right? There's only way you can see it is with either cardiac CT, and particularly with AI to really enhance your vision, basically, or an autopsy. Mm-hmm. And most people choose cardiac CT when given the choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, autopsy, or, you know, some people say, well, you know, because we don't take insurance.
Right.
Because we're, unfortunately, insurance company doesn't, they're not proactive. They're not preventative. Yeah. They literally, they're pay for services. So you have to have a heart attack or stroke.
Yeah.
And assuming you survive the heart attack or stroke, then they'll pay for our heart cath, or bypass surgery, or whatever. Or, you know, assuming you don't have a large deductible like most of us do, right? When you end up paying a fortune out of your own, going into debt, even though you have an insurance company supporting you, right? So we don't do that because they don't see us as being, you know, the proactive. They're not there yet. They're going to get there. Mm-hmm. They will get there. I promise you they're going to get there.
Yeah,
but they're not there yet.
We call it the clear cardio or the casket.
Yeah, yeah. So when they say, hey, you know, we have to pay for this. Yes, you have to pay for this. But guess what? The cost of our entire process, our system, of all the analysis, the disease detection and the treatment is about the same cost as a casket.
Yeah.
So you could choose.
And
you can actually
That doesn't include the burial of the flowers.
Or the flowers.
We're just talking the casket.
No pain and suffering and all that stuff, right?
Well, those things too.
Exactly. Or the headstone or the plot, right? No. Which is another $20,000.
I know, we're a great deal.
So we're just the cost of the casket.
Well, and I'm going to say too, I got to say this, that being the preventative guy, right? I do not cath people.
Yeah.
I stopped that 20 years ago when I found cardiac CT, and I don't stand, and I don't, you know, do cardiac surgery. So the people we see, like Mark, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have a foot on the interventional side, on the stenting or surgery side, right? So if you need stents or surgery, I will send you to colleagues of mine that are really, really good at doing that.
The best in the world.
Right.
At,
But I don't get paid more, and I don't make money. And my organization, right, because these most cardiologists are employed by hospitals, I don't get paid more to have you have stents, balloons, or surgery, right?
There's no conflict of interest with us.
So I have no conflict of interest, which is really the place I like to be.
Yeah, right? That's right.
If you need it, I will make sure you see the best in the world.
Yeah.
But if you don't need it, you don't need it.
Yeah.
So I'm really just advocating for our patients, which is a wonderful place to be as a doc.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're the same way. Yeah. It sounds like, you know, in your practice in Oklahoma, you know, you've come full circle. You're like, listen, I don't want to see people dying, dropping dead all the time, right? After 23 years of seeing most deaths caused by heart attack and strokes, by the time they're seeing you, that disease has progressed for decades and decades, right? All preventative, by the way, all preventable. Mm-hmm. We know that now, and reversible. But it's often too late by the time. And you're saying, no more of that. I want to go and start being productive, proactive, and preventative, which is makes you, just like Dr. Osborne and us at Clear Cardio, collectively, pretty rare birds in the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I love it because we're both dedicated to early detection. Ultimately, that translates to the prevention of by far the number one killer in the U.S. and globally. And, you know, whoever is out there, you know, that gets and understands and is proactive in prevention. I mean, I love it. It's just great. It's fantastic.
It's
the way it should be.
It's very rare that we get a chance to speak to other, you know, cardiologists. And I know they're out there.
Right.
But again, they're like hen's teeth.
Well, and I'm going to say, as a preventative cardiologist, right? I mean, most of this is brain. You know, I'm not twirling catheters or slicing things up and suturing them and all that. So it's really just, you know, knowledge, experience, training, all that stuff. And I love to say that a preventive cardiologist, you know, they got anyone else who's not, quote, trained as cardiologist. Well, guess what? You got the same pen and the same prescription pad I do. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think it's wonderful to see the democratization of prevention because, frankly, if you got access to cardiac CT and AI, right, and you can figure out what's going on with that, and you can write the rosuvastatin, the aspirin, or, you know, whatever might be appropriate for them. Mm-hmm. Yahoo, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to put, I'm sorry, my colleagues, but I want to put interventional colleagues and cardiac surgeons out of business. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and it can be done with preventive. And they, and it's a conflict of interest.
So I love meeting other preventive cardiologists.
Yeah.
There aren't many
of us.
Well,
he's not a cardiologist. He's a general doctor. Yeah.
Yeah, but
he can be.
He is, whether he knows it or
right,
not.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
If you're using clearly cardiac CT and all that, he is a preventive cardiologist. Yeah. Right.
It is like.
So
you
welcome
know,
to the club.
Yes. Welcome
well,
to the
thank
club.
You. Yes.
Good to have
great
you.
To be here. But it's. I was driving here and I thought it's like driving without any gauges on the car. I'm sure you've heard that analogy. It's like if we changed our oil whenever we saw it smoking a bit, that would not be a good thing. So, yeah, I did.
Sounds
my
like
own
my daughter.
The engine
by the way,
seizes up.
That's what my daughter does. She just runs the car out of gas.
Yeah.
No oil, whatever. We have to remind her. Otherwise, she'd just, why is the car seized up? Well, because you haven't put oil in it in like 7 years.
Yeah. Hopefully it runs. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I actually had my clearly 3 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Good.
It was quite an easy experience.
Good.
No big deal.
Awesome.
How was it good? Was the results good? Did it look like what you see or not?
Yeah. It was weird. I thought it was a mistake. But I have zero of anything. I don't
Congratulations.
Know.
I don't know if you heard earlier, but and this is actually also talking to the clearly people who have access to hundreds of thousands of these exams. Mm-hmm. As it turns out, 1% are zero.
Really?
Which tells you that is the penetrance of atherosclerosis of plaque in our society.
99%.
99% of us who are getting clearlies will have plaque. Mm-hmm. Whether a little bit or a lot, 1% have no evidence of plaque by clearly. So God bless you. You're going to live forever. Now, you're going to die of cancer because you can't live forever, but it will be heart disease, right?
Yeah.
The other flip side of that is, only 1%. So you're in the, if you took the SAT, you're in the 99th percentile.
Yeah.
Right? The flip side of that is, again, in asymptomatic people, no symptoms, I feel fine, normal stress test last week, I love to say, a third of our patients, and this is true with clearly nationally, a third of our patients will have stage 3 atherosclerosis.
I believe it, yeah.
Yeah.
Right? That's remarkable.
I feel fine, no symptoms, I feel fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Normal stress test, right?
Exactly.
So it's those two statistics, I think, are really kind of mind-blowing when you think of it.
Yeah, wow.
So, what would you say to our listeners today? The people that are watching the podcast or listening to the podcast, what would you say to them about being proactive in their cardiovascular health?
It's really a no-brainer. I mean, the stories go on and on and on. We've all known somebody who died well before their time, and it's just something that can be taken off the table. And it's not hard to do. It just takes a little bit of time. We pay more attention to our cars than we do, our cardiovascular health until it's too late. So, it just needs to get done. It's so easy to, I did it myself and it was, it's like, and if it comes out totally great and negative, it really gives you some real peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And if not, you can do something about it, like with
it's
that
treatable.
Staging process, 0, 1, 2, 3, and the action plans and everything laid out really well there, and then you follow it and everything, so it's actionable.
And if we do find plaque, guess what? 99% chance we will, right? The wonderful thing is, we are in the situation right now, as it stands right now, we have an incredible array of proven therapies that can stop and reverse plaque.
Yeah.
And the stuff that's in the pipeline is mind-blowing. Maybe we'll have a whole segment on what's in the pipeline.
We should do a podcast on that, yeah.
But the great thing is, if you don't have it, yahoo, that's phenomenal. That's great. But if you have it, it's completely actionable, right? We're going to basically save your life from the disease that kills about 44% of everybody else.
Yeah.
You know? And the other thing is, we found that by doing this and reviewing it with the patient, they are more likely to eat right, exercise, lose weight, take their medications, do all those important things that treat plaque than people where you go, well, your cholesterol's high. Here's a pill.
Yeah.
You're going to go, yeah, well, whatever. And I'm paying for money. I got a side effect. What am I taking it for? You have no idea.
Yeah.
But when you you show someone and review the images with them and say, you got plaque. Guess what? You got their attention.
They've got their why right there.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's the why, right? Which is, I mean, that's a really important part of the therapeutic process is saying, yes, you have the issue. Not maybe, could be, possibly, statistically, you're at risk, right? Mm-hmm. In fact, I hate risk, right? Risk means I don't know. Mm-hmm. I like knowing. You're either okay or you're not.
Yeah, the binary approach. Yeah, it's either you do or you don't.
Yeah.
And if you do, if you don't, great, keep doing what you're doing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then it just becomes about, you know, quality at that point. And if you do, okay, let's understand it. Let's resolve it.
Right.
And that's why I think what you're doing out in Oklahoma with really it's quality of life, not just quantity, of quality of life as well is, you know, folks like us at Clear Cardio, we're in detecting the disease, similar to what you're doing, and then we're treating the disease so that, you know, practices like yourself who then take it to the next level and say, okay, Clear Cardio and Dr. Osborne, those folks, we've identified the disease. We're treating the disease. We're going to make sure they never have a heart attack or stroke and that they don't die from that. But then, you know, where you pick up from there as well is now let's really make those years wonderful. Let's make that skin better. Let's make your physiology better, the muscles stronger. Let's give you this new lease on life. Let's get that weight down. Let's do all of those things that are necessary. And so it's a nice relationship. And really, you know, that's a great segue into an announcement we'd like to make here at Clear Cardio. So Clear Cardio and its team here, along with Dr. Osborne, we are announcing an affiliate program. So we are reaching out to, we've gotten to the point where we've been so successful. It's a good thing. Here in Texas, in our location in Carrollton, it's time to expand and time to grow. And so we're reaching out to those of you who are watching this who are cardiologists, regardless if you're interventional or claim yourself as a preventional cardiologist, or if you're just a general MD, doctor, who wants to be involved like yourself, right, who's in that space, reach out to us. If you'd like to be an affiliate of Clear Cardio to work in our program, to work alongside Dr. Osborne, we've got a whole training program associated with that and the Clear Cardio process and how we can work together to bring our Clear Cardio program process to your practice and consistency across the board for new patients coming to you who want to be proactive. And I know we're in discussions about that, you and I, already. So I'm excited about having those conversations moving forward. I bet there's a lot of people in Oklahoma who would love to be proactive and take that prevention as power approach.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for what a wonderful, good conversation here. Anything you'd like to say in closing?
No, I think we wrapped it up. I think you guys are doing a great job here. I think that it needs to change. It's 2024 for crying out loud. 2025, geez.
2025.
So we need to kind of get after it a little bit better.
Where are you located in Oklahoma? For those people that are in Oklahoma area, come out and visit you?
Yeah, so we're in Oklahoma City, just on the north edge of town is Edmond area. So that's kind of the region.
Do you have a website?
Yeah, primehealthassociates.com.
Primehealthassociates.com, you heard it here.
And do you have other who else works with you
in your group? We're actually been collaborating with Optispan, Matt Chamberlain, and some of those guys over there in Seattle.
Okay.
We see patients from all over the country.
Great.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
Well, yeah. Again, it's always wonderful to meet and hang out with and chat with another preventative cardiologist.
Likewise, so. Yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Osborne, any last words?
No, I hope I think these our podcasts I think are full of gems and pearls, and I hope you got some of those today. There'll be more to come,
of course.
It's just always a pleasure meeting new friends and colleagues.
Yes, it's great to not feel so alone in the wilderness with preventive cardiology. So,
exactly.
Thank you for what you do.
Yeah.
And then for all of you who hung in there with us, we appreciate you hanging in there and enjoying and participating in the Prevention is Power podcast brought to you by Clear Cardio. I'm G. Enright, the host. I'm Clear.
I'm Cardio.
Thanks for watching. Cheers. Until next time.